So partway through year five, I moved with my family from Adelaide to Tasmania, to a little town called Ulverston. And my very first day in year five in Ulverston, Central Primary School, I went swimming. And I don't know if it was 1 week or 2 weeks, but it was the first week or 2 weeks of my time at school in year five in Tasmania. And I have a really clear memory of getting out of the water sometime late in that first week or first 2 weeks, but early on in my time there, I just been like, oh man, that really hurts. There was this thing in my gut, wasn't going well. I had my shower, got changed, went back to school, and still wasn't real good. If anything, was getting a little bit worse. And then I went home, and then kept on getting worse and worse. And eventually, Mum and Dad took me to the hospital, and turned out that I had appendicitis. And so they operated, and I was in hospital for a few days, and then went back to school the next week, and had to not play sport for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And it was torture. For me, as a nine-year-old boy, the one way I was going to connect with other kids was through playing sport, and I just loved to play sport. So to sit there and watch was one of the most torturous things, because everyone else was playing sport. I didn't know anyone, but to sit there and just watch. And one of the advantages I did have was that I had hope. I was pretty confident that I was going to get totally better and be able to get out there and play sport, and I'd be able to meet some people, and it'd be all good. I wonder if any of you have had a similar sort of experience where you couldn't participate, you couldn't be a part of something for a period of time, but you were confident that you were going to be able to join in the not-too-distant future. Maybe some of you are experiencing something like that at the moment. But maybe there's some of you that have had the kind of experience or are currently experiencing something where there's not that hope. And it could be a physical thing. It could be that you've had an operation, or it could be some sort of chronic thing. Or it may not be physical so much as mental or something else, emotional. But you don't have that sense of hope. You don't have that sense of, oh, next week or even next month, I'll have it sorted. It's just this thing that doesn't seem to get any better and doesn't seem to go away. We're going to have a look at a guy who had something like that. And he had something like that not for just weeks or months or even a few years, but he experienced that very thing for longer than I've been alive. And we're going to have a look at that. It's a story in the Bible. Before we get to it, though, I just want to recap and let you know where we're at. So we started on this series called Seven Signs. And John's Gospel, so one of the four accounts of Jesus' life that we have in the Bible, depicts seven different miracles that Jesus did. And it seems a bit strange because you read in Matthew little bits that talk about how lots of people came to Jesus and he healed every one of them. It says that he healed every disease and sickness. And so he obviously did a lot more than seven miracles, but John only tells us about seven of them. And then we get to the end of the Gospel of John, second to last chapter, the last two verses. It tells us, he says, there are heaps more things that Jesus did that are not recorded in this book. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. And so the purpose of what he wrote down was so that we would believe. And by believing, we would have life. And the two things that we believe in there are believe that he's the Christ, the promised one, the Messiah, the King above all kings, and that he is God himself. And by believing those things, we actually experience life. And so the first sign we'd expect, all right, so Jesus comes and he's going to do something to really clearly and obviously help somebody. And he's definitely going to make sure that he fulfills all the commandments. So back in the old days, Old Testament, there were 613 different laws. It's a lot. So there's 10 really famous ones, the 10 commandments, but that wasn't enough apparently. 613 different laws are detailed through the Old Testament. But apparently even that wasn't enough, because we have learned that there were heaps of other laws that the Jewish people added on to the 613 commandments. And one of those we'll have a look at a little bit later. Something that isn't commanded in the Old Testament, but they saw as being the law and things you couldn't avoid. And you might remember from a couple of weeks ago, we looked at what happened when the law was given. When it was like, all right, now it's time for this nation to receive its law. Right before that happened, there was this guy called Moses, and God does a miracle through him. And it was to turn perfectly good drinkable water into blood. But then you have the absolute contrast of the first miracle that Jesus does, which is he turns undrinkable water into amazing wine for the intention of it being drunk. And interesting that 613 laws, a number of those laws would prohibit things like drunkenness and some of the stuff that can come from drunkenness. But Jesus goes and does this thing which would actually enable people to go and get drunk. It's like, what? The first sign that Jesus does is this amazing, generous, lavish gift where he does save a family from massive embarrassment of running out of wine. Yeah, so he helps out in that way. But he also just gives the opportunity for a bunch of people to get smashed. And that's the first miracle that Jesus does. He's like, I'm here. Have some wine. Hundreds of liters of wine. It seems strange. And then you get to the second one. So seven different signs. And I think as we look through those seven different signs, we're going to understand the authority that Jesus has because we see different things that he does. But we're also going to understand who are the beneficiaries of the signs, of the miracles that Jesus does. And so the first lot, first sign, it's like a bunch of people at a party who want alcohol. And apparently for a bunch of people at a party who want alcohol, Jesus is their answer. That's interesting. And then you get to the second sign, which Jo preached on last week, and she did an amazing job. And she talked about this royal official. And he's got a massive problem. He's got a child who is on their deathbed. And he goes to Jesus and asks Jesus to do something about this problem. Asks Jesus to heal his kid. But he goes far enough that for him to go back from where he sees Jesus, to go back to his house, it's the next day. And so this kid is not in the same postcode as Jesus. I don't have postcodes back then, but anyway, you get what I'm saying. This kid was a long way away from where Jesus was. And Jesus says, it's done. Your child is better. And it happened like that. And so for someone who has an advocate, who has someone that's going after Jesus and asking him on their behalf, we find that Jesus is the answer. And another interesting thing is these people weren't Jews. So Jesus was a Jew. And in that day, if you were a Jew, you didn't associate with people who weren't. Or you tried very hard to avoid associating with people who weren't. But Jesus heals someone that's not Jewish. So if you're born into the wrong family, or if you're born in the wrong country, then Jesus is your answer. And that brings us to the third of these seven signs. And we don't even know what this guy's name is. But 38 years, he has been a cripple. 38 years, he hasn't been able to walk. And we don't know heaps of details. We don't know whether he has family and friends that help him out. We certainly get the impression that he's on his own through some of the things that are talked about. But I want to read to you just the first part of this story. So this is from John chapter 5, and we're going to pick it up in verse 2. It says, now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool in Aramaic called Bethesda. Has anyone heard the word Bethesda before? A few of you? Anyone go to a school that used to be called Bethesda? Which has five roofed colonnades. Anyone been to colonnades before? All right, so you've got a pool. It's called Bethesda. And not just this one guy who had been crook for 38 years, but a whole multitude of people. In these five colonnades, lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. So a bunch of people who are really struggling. And there was this tradition. And we don't read anything else about this tradition in the scriptures. But it tells us that they believed that an angel would come down and stir up the waters. And the first person to go into the water after it had been stirred up would be totally and completely healed. There's hundreds of people that are waiting for the next time that the waters get stirred up, hoping that it's going to happen soon, and they will be the first one in and they will be healed. And then Jesus comes along. He sees one man was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. 38, can you imagine? 38 years of not being able to walk. The hopelessness that could so easily dominate him. All the things that he would have expected, assuming this was an injury that happened, it doesn't say that he was 38 years old. You'd assume that he had some sort of injury or a sickness that caused him to be paralyzed. And all the dreams, all the expectations of, oh yeah, you know, I'll have a job, be able to earn money, that was gone. And the dreams of getting married and having kids was gone. Just this hopeless situation. But he was still at the pool. He was still at this place where just maybe he was going to be able to get his miracle. But when Jesus speaks to him, when Jesus comes along and says, well, Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been there a long time. He said to him, do you want to be healed? That could be an offensive thing to ask someone that's sitting there by a pool which is supposed to heal people. He's like, do I want to be healed? And here's his response. He doesn't answer him directly. He says, sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. And while I am going, another steps down before me. So he just states why he's still there and not healed. He has no one there to help him. So he's in this crowd of people, but he feels all alone. And it's not clear whether he was being brought there every day by his family and then taken back at the end of the day, or whether that was actually where he slept. One translation makes it appear that it is the place that he slept by calling his mat his sleeping mat. Maybe that was where he lived. But he would have begged in that place. That was his only way of earning anything and getting food. There's no social security, there's no Medicare. He was totally dependent on other people. And just that little glimmer of hope, maybe he would be able to get into the pool as the next person. And then Jesus totally changes his life. He says, get up, take up your bed and walk. And at once the man was healed and took up his bed and walked. Boom. So if you are in a crowd of people and you feel all alone, Jesus is your answer. Jesus was this guy's answer. He was waiting for the exact right circumstances that might one day happen and for him to be in the right place at the right time and be able to get there. But in the end, Jesus came and totally changed things. See, so far, if we go through the three miracles we had so far, we've got Mary, so Jesus' mom is the one that goes, hey, Jesus, how about you fix this problem of not having any wine? So Jesus initiates the miracle. Sorry, Mary initiates the miracle. Second time around, you have the dad, this official that comes and he asks Jesus. And so he initiates the miracle. But isn't it fascinating? In this one, it's Jesus that approaches this man. Do you want to be healed? And so Jesus initiates the miracle. And there's no sense that this man had any faith in Jesus whatsoever. In fact, he had no idea who he was, as we'll read in a minute. So he didn't ask Jesus for anything. He didn't expect anything from him. But he is totally and completely healed, instantly, in fact. But then we're going to see the reaction of others as well as the reaction of this particular man as we keep on reading. It says, now that day was the Sabbath. So I mentioned before, 613 different laws. And then they added more. There was a rule about the Sabbath. There was this really clear instruction to keep the Sabbath holy as a special day for God. That's what they were to do. But then they added all these stipulations to it. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, it's the Sabbath, and it's not lawful for you to take up your bed. But he answered them, the man who healed me, that man said to me, take up your bed and walk. Now, if someone who has not walked for 38 years stands up, starts walking, what's the one question you want to ask them? Who told you to carry that bed? Wouldn't be the first thing that I'll ask someone who's walking for the first time in 38 years. And he even says that the man who healed me told me to do it. So he's passing the blame. He's saying, it's not my fault. It was this other guy. I don't know who he is, but he was the one that told me to do it. So it's really his fault. Don't blame me. But what a ridiculous thing to focus on. So these people that are asking him, who told you to do that? Are focused on totally the wrong thing. And I reckon it's really easy for us with stuff like this, for say a miracle, to focus on either the person that the miracle came through, so the person that's praying for it, or to focus on the person who has been prayed for, that received the healing, and to compare with them. And to go, well, there must be something they're doing wrong. Or, I don't agree with that. Or, I haven't actually seen that happen in me. That person got healed, but I haven't been healed yet. And we compare and we judge rather than celebrating what's just happened. So these guys have either witnessed a miracle or the implications of a miracle, and they're not celebrating. They're comparing and they're judging. They're going, well, what is wrong? There must be something wrong. This is amazing, and I wasn't involved in it. There must be something wrong. They asked him, who is the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk? That's the thing they focus on. Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn as there was a crowd in the place. Really fascinating tension with Jesus that we pick up in John's gospel. He wanted to set everybody free. But he knew when the time was right. And so when Mary asks him to do something about the lack of wine, his response is, my time has not yet come. Interesting response. And he says that a few times throughout John's gospel, my time has not yet come. And here it tells us, as there was a crowd in the place, that's why Jesus had withdrawn. Because some of the time, there were people that wanted to make him king, make him an earthly king and give him that crown. There were other times people wanted to kill him. He's destined, or he is, the king of kings. He's the one that every king looks to as their king. He's the king above everyone else, but he's not an earthly king. So he knew what was required to stay away from being crowned as an earthly king. He also needed to die, but he needed to die at the right time. And so he was very careful what he did and when, but his desire was to set every single person free. And so he heals this guy, but then he slips away because there was a crowd. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. The man went away and daubed on Jesus. It's interesting. The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had healed him. When we read other stories of miracles that happen, the response is the person celebrates. The person is overwhelmed with joy. Often they'll thank Jesus. Thank you so much. But this guy hears something from Jesus that he probably didn't want to hear. Jesus says something that just rubs him up the wrong way, See, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. How about something encouraging, Jesus? Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. And his response straight away from that is to go and to tell the Pharisees that it was Jesus. And try and get Jesus in some more hot water. It's fascinating. Is there something? Well, let's just look at this guy a little bit more. Let's think about it. Jesus has set him totally free. He's gone from not being able to walk to being totally healed. And then Jesus invites him into a different sort of life, a life where sin is not an issue. But he gets offended at Jesus. Jesus sets every single person free. All we have to do is believe in him and believe him. And we are set totally free. But the thing is, there are times that we will pick up the Bible and we'll read it, or we'll hear something spoken from the Bible and we go, oh, I don't know about that. And we can get offended by it. And so the person that set us free and invited us into a brand new life, we go, oh, we want to stand at a distance because there's something that we're just unsure about. Well, how does that work? Can I really live without sin? Jesus has done everything required to set you totally and completely free. But there is something bigger at play in this than the physical healing. And he wants the guy to get it. I have just totally changed your life from a physical standpoint, but I want to introduce you to eternal life and a thing that will give you freedom, will give you joy, and give you peace regardless of your circumstances. That's what Jesus was inviting him into, but he took offense. What about you? Jesus invites you into life, into real life, eternal life. Life with him that never ends. But there's some things that you'll come across where you're like, oh, I don't understand this, or I don't like this. But we take the whole thing. It's a package deal. I don't know where you're at, but I do want to encourage you that whichever story you identify with, if it's that those people at the party, they didn't lack anything that was like necessary. They had the basics. And they just wanted to have more fun. They wanted some wine just to spice things up a little bit. Maybe you can relate to that. Maybe you're like, yeah, I've got the basics. Life's all right. I just want to have more fun though. Jesus is the answer. Maybe you have someone that is going to bat for you. Maybe you have someone that would go and advocate on your behalf and try and get you the help that you need, because you are needy. There's stuff going on, but you've got people that are in your corner with you, helping you out. And Jesus is your answer. Maybe you feel totally alone. Maybe you feel hopeless. Jesus is your answer. Absolutely. Totally your answer. I'm going to invite the band to come back up and I'm going to pray. Father, thank you for Jesus. Thank you that he came that we may have life and have life to the full. Thank you that he didn't come to condemn us and to add a whole bunch more rules and things to feel guilty about. But rather, he came to give us life and to redeem us. I ask that tonight would be a time where we would get it. I pray that we would have revelation, fresh understanding about who you are, what you've done, and what that means for us. What changes because of Jesus? What changes because he died on that cross and took my sin, took it away? What changes? Would you show us tonight and maybe receive it in faith? In Jesus' name. Amen. So a big, massive shift, 613 laws. And it was all based, if you were going to be right with God back in that time, back before Jesus, you had to get it right. It was all based on your performance. It was all based on what you did. Massive shift. When Jesus comes, he says on the cross, as he breathes his last, it is finished. That whole system of having to be right, having to get it right every time, that system was done. And it's no longer about what we do, but it's about what he has done. And he's setting that up, and we're getting pictures of that as we look through these seven signs. It's comprehensive, and it includes everyone, even you, even the person that you've written off and going, ah, Jesus isn't for them. Absolutely, he is. Absolutely, he is.